Hi, I'm Jonathan Mann.
I'm one of the many Matts.
And this is Digitally Rare, a show about digitally owned things now and in the animal software future! We are incredibly excited and honored to have Sam Spike on the podcast. He of Animal Software, Finney's, JPG. I didn't even know this, but you previously worked for Fingerprints. I didn't even know that part. So welcome.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Jonathan. Yeah. Thank you, Matt. It's great to be here.
It's great to have you. I was going to ask if you had heard of this trend in the space called animal software, but it seems that we've established that that's the case.
I have indeed heard of it. I've heard a thing or two about
a thing or animal, two
yeah. about software generated animals or whatever.
That's awesome. I mean, you don't even have to expound on it. You know, it's just animal software, animal period, software period. There's nothing
people
more. It's
it.
Like music NFTs, actually.
Yeah,
it's actually.
Yeah, that's right.
You just say it exactly. And you get it. Yeah.
It's iconic. Maybe.
Well, you got to catch up to music NFTs then and say like L2 animal software. Like that's where it's all going.
There you go. That's where
it's true, actually. That is a good direction to take the meme.
Yeah, you got an L2 animal software and then super chain animal
ZK
software.
ZK animal
then,
software.
Oh my God. The ZK animal software is going to change the world. Holy shit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh my God. That's amazing.
That's going in the next pitch deck for sure.
Oh yeah. You could probably raise on like probably $3 billion, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Proto dank sharding.
Proto dank animal software sharding.
Yeah.
That's what I'm sharding. Talking about. Let's fuck account animal account abstraction.
Animal account abstraction.
Whoa. ERC6551 animal owned software.
There you go.
Let's fucking
animal
go.
Owned software is very good.
So
anyway, great meme. Well done on that one.
So it is a great meme. And I don't imagine that very many people who are listening don't know, but like for context, Finney's are just so great. Can you
adorable
explain
beyond belief?
Yeah. Can you explain
thank you
what they are? Like what they, you know, clearly they're something today and the idea is to grow them into something. They're such a different kind of NFT. They're extremely unique in the world of NFTs.
And where did they come from? I have like a very basic understanding of Ed and he's been working on this for a while, but can you tell
give
us
the
how
whole,
y'all got
give
here?
Give us the whole origin and like, and yeah, give us
absolutely
the down there.
Yeah. The story of Finney. Well, Finney or Finilia, it was originally called Finilia. We recently rebranded to Finney because nobody could pronounce Finilia, including very terms of our own. Yeah, stop, drop the liar.
That's what it is. Drop the liar.
Yeah,
it's cleaner.
Drop the liar. It's cleaner. numerous members of our own team still can't pronounce Finilia.
Yeah.
But
It's just one of those things where people were calling them Finneys and you lean into that,
exactly.
Right? It's
it
just what
just
people,
like,
yeah.
So much easier. And yeah, everybody already called them Finneys, including me. So yeah. But Finneys or Finilia are the like brainchild of an artist called Ed Fornieles. Ed is a British artist who's kind of part of that generation of kind of, he would hate me to say this, but kind of post-internet art, as it's now been kind of termed. Artists thinking about making art about the kind of world after the internet or the world after the advent of the internet, the World Wide Web. And a lot of that work involved kind of satirical, kind of speculative futures and setting up speculative businesses that were kind of not real but kind of were real, or kind of, you know, doing kind of a lot of work with social media and with memes and all of these things. And a lot of Ed's work is like that. He did like a big performance piece with Facebook early on and stuff. But Finilia was a piece he started working on in 2016, which still feels pretty recent to me. And it involved this idea of creating kind of adorable digital animals, digital creatures, whose moods and whose behavior was connected to different types of data, namely financial data, and within financial data, currencies, currency markets. And I think the kind of concept that he was playing with was, what does it mean to take something as abstract and large, but also as important as and impactful at the high level as the US dollar, and then to give it this body and this face that you have some kind of emotional response to, some kind of emotional attachment to, or even some sense of empathy with. And that was what he did. He created a Finney for the dollar, a Finney for the British pound. Even back then, there was a Finney for ETH as well, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah.
So crypto's kind of been part of it in a small way since the very beginning. Like, he's been crypto aware and has made work kind of in exploring crypto, blockchain, whatever, for a while now. He showed these creatures kind of in various galleries and museums around the world. He turned them into sculptures. He made like a great kind of video art piece about them that you can find on YouTube, which is called Tulip Fever. He sold one even to some like hedge fund in New York that trades like the yen to USD. So there's some yen Finney somewhere in Wall Street. And then when I met him, which was in 2021, he was exploring how to kind of like grow this world out and take it to a larger number of people, and specifically how he could turn it into some kind of NFT collection. Obviously, he'd, you know, seen the hype around kind of Bored Apes and these kind of collectibles, 10K editions, and he wanted to figure out here how he could turn this work and this idea into one of those, but in his own way. So that's kind of that's where I entered the story, and that's, you know, I introduced him to people who were able to help him do that, like Jake, who's our like CTO, who wrote the smart contract for the collection, and Dollar, who manages our community, and, you know, all of the kind of key players in that kind of operation. So it turned from an artwork into this 10K NFT project, but the NFTs didn't just track traditional financial assets. In fact, not at all. They were connected to different crypto assets, specifically 10 kind of big coins from the 2021 bull run, some of which are not doing so great these days, but back when we picked them, they had kind of good communities and following around them of sorts. So there's like ETH, Bitcoin, but there's also things like Avalanche and Solana, and there's Dogecoin, of course, Tezos and Uniswap. And yeah, each of the 10,000 Finneys is associated with one of these 10 assets, and not just associated to it in terms of its emotions being connected to the performance of that asset, but also it is designed as a kind of representation, like a kind of mimetic representation of that asset. So, for example, all of the Doge Finney are dogs.
Right.
Sick. I didn't realize that, but obviously.
Yeah, clearly. That's such a great idea.
All of the uni Finneys are unicorns.
Right.
Thank goodness.
Yes. Yeah. And then I bought some when they were minting. How did that mint go? Did that mint, I mean, when in 2021 were we at that point when you guys launched?
So we were in 20, by the time we launched, we were in 2022. So I mean, the story here is kind of long, and I try not to just kind of like ramble the whole, I mean, you know, I can go on and on about it, but I met Ed by accident, totally by accident, in October 2021 at Freeze Art Fair. So like a suitably kind of traditional art world venue. My background personally is in the traditional art world before I got involved in NFTs. And I was meant to be meeting somebody, and he had, I think, double booked me with Ed. And so I met him, and he was meeting Ed, and we were all there. And Ed started showing us on his phone these videos of Finneys, and he explained what they were, and that's how it got going. Then I, you know, sort of brainstorming with him and visiting his studio and figuring out how we could make this happen. And by the time January came around, we had like a small team of 3D artists and stuff that we were working with to begin developing the art for the collection. And I think it was the 7th of January, 2022, we did a sort of stealth launch pre-sale of 1,000 finnies, but in the form of eggs. So people minted just these finny eggs, and the eggs were like, you know, it showed on the egg what asset the finny was associated with. So was it an ETH finny? Was it an Avalanche finny? Whatever. And
but you
with
couldn't
the
see
money
what it actually looked like. Yeah.
But you couldn't see what it actually looked like. And
yeah,
with the money that we raised from the pre-sale, which was about 250K or something, we invested all of that into hiring a kind of ridiculous number of 3D modelers and stuff to do the whole collection. And we always joked that because Ed didn't really know much about NFTs at that point or much about the amount of effort that goes into one of these projects. We kind of didn't really tell him, but he ended up doing about 10,000 times more work than most people do and killing himself for 8 months to kind of conceptualize and then manage his team of at one point over 30 people who are working on developing the assets and for the collection.
That is, compare that to like spending $500 to pay like a Fiverr artist, you know, like
I just saw the Minted documentary that came out of Tribeca and the ratio of work that some people put into their bull market projects was hilarious to watch.
Apparently there's a great scene in that about the Polymorphs launch.
That is exactly the thing I'm referencing.
Oh, I can't wait. I can't wait to watch this. Oh my God.
I won't spoil anything. It's an excellent scene.
You went to see it? Like, it's not out yet.
Yeah, I went to see it with Mitchell F. Chan and Stevie P. and
oh my God,
Dimitri. And we're cracking up the show.
Dream,
when this thing goes.
Dream hang. That's like, oh my God.
Yeah. It was a good, it was really cool to see it with them. And yeah, the this row was like the class clowns of the theater. We were just like, oh my God.
No, no.
I think the whole theater was cringing for that scene, but it hurt more for us. But anyway.
I wonder if it's going to get released. Yeah, I'm excited.
Yeah, it's really good. It's a solid film. Anyway, back to the cutility.
Yeah, the cutility. Jesus, Matt. Jesus Christ. Right. Okay. So I wonder, I can't remember if I bought one on secondary or on the sale. But then, okay, so it was in 2022. So it was like already, was it pre or post SBA? Was it pre or post Luna
It was, I feel like I get my timing mixed up on this.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was post Luna, but it was pre FTX. Like it was August. It was like mid August. Mid August 2022.
Real time means nothing to us anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah, literally nothing. It's just like, cascading kind of chronology of disasters.
Right.
And
so August.
It was a pretty dead period. I mean, it wasn't as dead as it is now. Like, projects were still launching and minting out. But at the time, it felt kind of pretty barren compared to what we've become accustomed to in the bull market. And even early that year, there were still, you know, I think Azuki launched in early 2022, for example. You know, there were still projects that were minting out doing well. And by the time we came around, we were like, one of the funny things is we still actually weren't fully ready to launch, but was kind of like, we have to launch now. So one thing we did is we held back like 150 or something and kept them as special golden eggs, which then turned into one of one, like, unique finnies that Ed put even more amount of work into.
And that was
a way of kind of keeping the community engaged as well for the rest of the year. So every fortnight we'd reveal five of these eggs and stuff, and everyone was like, oh my God, this is such a great kind of like engagement, attention farming thing. And we were like, well, it's actually because we just like totally ran out of time. And the reason one of the reasons we launched when we did and didn't wait was because there was one of those like tiny kind of micro pumps those couple weeks in August. And we were just like, okay, we have to try and ride this because we know that this is definitely going to only last a couple of weeks.
Yes.
It was a miracle. I mean, I've done quite a lot of mints now, and it's always so nerve-wracking. I really did not know if we, you know, everybody told us either we were pricing them too much or that the allow list was oversubscribed. So I was kind of like, well, I think we've hit some good in between here. If people either think there are too many people trying to buy them, or they're overpriced. We just about, there was a scary moment when it felt like we weren't going to mint out, but we did manage to. And it was only about an hour and a half or something. So yeah, it went well.
Nice. Right. Well, it's such a relief when that happens.
Tells the story of the eggs, which I didn't know.
Yeah.
It's very cool to see that come out of a very native constraint.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's great. And the eggs are the ones, I mean, that's a whole other thing. Like, even the cost, frankly, that went into some of those eggs, like, I think if you calculate the cost per unit of some of those specials, they cost like between $1,000 and $2,000 to produce one of those things. It's kind of completely ridiculous amount of money.
And that's because how is that broken down? Like,
so that's literally just like the amount we had to, the amount of time that it took the model, like the level of detail in some of these models, the kind of unique ones, is really actually extraordinary. I mean, it's massive overkill because nobody can see it because, you know, they live with these tiny JPEGs or these tiny GIFs or whatever.
No one can see it yet, though. That's the key.
I was going to say, I was watching Her for the first time after the Apple Vision announcement, and that scene with the little character that says, fuck you.
That looks...
It's a Finny, right? I mean, obviously Finnies are cuter, but you know, like, we have all the technology to reproduce that scene now, starting early next year. And like, when I saw that, I was like, oh shit, that's gonna be, you know, this is like the environment in which a cute little co-pilot would make a lot of sense.
For sure. I mean, that seems kind of crazy because the thing does actually look like a Finny.
It does. It really does. Yeah. When was that movie? 2013 or something? Really prescient.
Anyway. Really super prescient. Super prescient. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. And so now things, so many things have happened, many of which I don't think, I mean, like, I have the app on my phone.
Oh, the app is great.
I have the
Apple Watch app. Let's go. That was awesome.
Like, you know, but then take us through like some of the other, so take us through like some of the things you guys have shipped.
Yeah.
And are you going to be able to make it through the bear market?
Yeah.
And like,
good question.
What's the dream here? Like, what's the, what's the Animal Software eats the world dream?
Yeah. Dream eats the world dream. So we've kind of like, we have a really special team, I think, not just in terms of like, I love everybody dearly who's working on this. And that's one of the reasons why we kind of all decided to kind of dedicate ourselves to this full time, as opposed to just have it. Cause there was a moment after the mint, and after the mint, there were a couple of months where we had to then develop the animations for these characters and connect them to the coins themselves. Right. And so that actually took 3 months to get enough animations that there was a good amount of variety in the collection. I think we were launched with about 30 or 35 of them. But then once we'd done that, there was a moment where we were like, okay, well, you know, this could stay like this, basically, and be kind of, you know, an artwork by Ed and living as this kind of NFT ecosystem, but no further promises, no roadmap, no whatever. And we could have all gone off and done other things. Or we could kind of decide to, which we did, to stick with it and really try and like grow it out into a bigger vision. And we have this unique set of skills in the team, I think, of working with an artist like Ed, who has an incredible imagination. So incredible that, you know, I walk into the small office space that we share, which is just like an artist studio space that we rent. And sometimes one day I remember I walked in and he was sitting there at this desk that we share, and he had this book in front of him that he was poring over that was all about how to build a theme park. And this was
awesome.
He's kind of obsessively reading this and taking notes and whatever. So he's got kind of great big dreams. He's obsessed with Disney.
Yeah.
A lot of his work over the years has been about characters and character IP and avatars. So he's really got a kind of brain for this kind of stuff. But then Jake, who's, you know, leads the kind of technical side of things and the product side of things, is like a ex-Silicon Valley product executive type, but with a great kind of creative mind as well. So we have like a real technical kind of competence on the team and an ability to build and ship products, which I think a lot of other teams don't have. And that's quite a potent combination. And what we've decided to do so far with that is, you know, initially we shipped kind of like our own marketplace for the collection, because we realized pretty much before we'd actually launched that OpenSea or Blur or these other marketplaces weren't going to really be able to accommodate what we built, because it requires being able to automatically refreshing the metadata all the time. You need the kind of resolution of the GIFs or the MP4s to be really high. And, you know, if you look at the collection on OpenSea today, it's all right, but you really just don't get a feel for it. So we built our own, we used the Reservoir protocol to build our own vertical marketplace at finny.world. And you can go there and you can browse the collection sort of the way, well, we're actually kind of redesigning at the moment, but the way that we wanted it to be seen. Mm-hmm. And not only are the GIFs super, you know, good quality, but actually they have like price overlays on them. So you can see the Finny and you can see real time what the price is of Bitcoin. So, you know, why is your Bitcoin Finny crying? Well, it's because Bitcoin's down 4% today or whatever. So that's a kind of nice thing. And then we took that a step further by building a mobile app in the first quarter of this year, which is basically like CoinGecko or like TradingView or something like that. It's a portfolio financial asset tracking app, but the charts are all expressed and performed by your Finnies. Anyone can use this app. You don't have to own the NFTs to use it. If you don't own the NFTs though, you only have like 10 free ones that you can choose from. And you can basically track any coin on CoinGecko or any US stock or ETF on this app by training your Finnies on them. You like,
I didn't even know train, this. That's amazing.
Search for the asset, and then there's this really cute 10-second animation of your Finny sitting there on a little stool in front of a little table with a mini laptop on it, typing away, kind of like it's doing its exam revision.
Due diligence.
Or something.
Yeah.
It's due diligence, exactly. And then at the end, it kind of like pushes the table away and gets up and jumps jubilantly. And then that asset, like Apple stock or Tesla or whatever it is, gets added to your dashboard. So that's a fun little a product. And the thing that's been really popular about the app, as Matt, you mentioned, the widgets. So you can create home screen and lock screen widgets with these Finnies for your iPhone. The lock screen one is just like a little face, but the home screen ones are the actual Finnies themselves. Unfortunately, Apple still don't support like dynamic moving widgets at this moment in time. Fingers crossed they will soon. But for now, it's like you get every 15 minutes, basically a different frame from the activity that your Finny is doing at that moment in time, as well as the price information of the asset that it's tracking. And we've also built this so that it works on Apple Watch. Although, whereas at the beginning, when we first shipped this, there were tons of people who were using them on Watch, and Watch felt like it was almost a natural environment for something like this, kind of Tamagotchi-like. You really have it on you.
Yes.
It's small, portable.
100%. Yeah.
I think it's something about the kind of signposting that we currently have on the app. We've seen a lot fewer people use the Watch recently, so we're trying to kind of reconfigure that a little bit and get people back into using the Watch app too. But yeah.
Can I ask? I love that.
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I just like the feeling that the Finny is a consistent character doing consistent things, and there are many digital portals into viewing what that Finny is up to at the moment.
Oh, I love that. I love
right,
that
like,
idea.
Like it has an aura. It has a, you know, Walter Benjamin aura, like a consistency of mind. And we're just receiving, you know, fragments
little,
of that.
Little transmissions
right, totally.
That you can that you can view for through a variety of portals.
Right.
Yeah.
Have you put a Finny on one of the like volumetric displays, like the Looking Glass, for example?
No, we have not. Not yet. But that's a very good idea.
Cool. Yeah, I don't know where to get one,
cool.
But that would be cool.
I have just like a weird logistical question. I'm looking at the marketplace, which is looks amazing, by the way. I hadn't seen the proper marketplace. Do you have a sense of like how many sales go through the marketplace versus something like Blur or OpenSea?
The answer is very few.
Yeah.
And I think that's because, well, that's for all kinds of reasons. The only, you know, the good thing about the marketplace for us is we never really thought that the whole kind of royalties thing was going to be a particularly sustainable business model for us. But if we can get the royalty money, then we, you know, that's a plus. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you're trying to buy a SudoSwap now actually does support royalties and enforce royalties by default on their new V2 protocol. But on the old SudoSwap, if you were to buy a Finny that was from a pseudo pool via our front end, then we would basically layer the royalties on top automatically. Mm. So it was a way of kind of recovering some of that lost revenue. But right. Yeah, the amount of volume going through it is not particularly large. And frankly, like, we're about to redo the website quite significantly and redesign the discovery, what we call the marketplace, which is the discovery page, so that much more emphasis is placed on discovering the collection in a really fun way where all of the cool different finis and different families and whatever gets surfaced.
Yes.
As opposed to kind of optimizing it for sales, which is what it currently just looks like an OpenSea fork, right?
Right.
With like different colors. And so, yeah, that doesn't feel very fun to us. It's more fun to build like a kind of a Finny Dex style experience,
yes,
right?
Yes, yes.
Most people who see Finny, like they go to the page, they browse by floor price, they see right. the 15 most lowest listed types, and they don't understand that there's 151 types and 200 one of ones and all of this other stuff. So we want to like be able to bring that to the fore much more.
Yeah. Yeah. There's such a, like, there's such this, I think we're bound to move. And I think by the time things pick up again, if they ever do, we're bound to move. And I hope we move beyond, yeah, beyond this kind of just like what the world that OpenSea and Blur have wrought.
Yeah. Yeah.
And certainly for Song a Day, like, I've reached the same conclusions. Like, there's just no way that Song a Day can exist as an NFT collection in its full potential on these platforms, because Blur literally doesn't even play videos. So it's like,
yeah,
you know,
right. So, but you have your own site, right, that you can buy them through.
Yeah, we have our own. In fact, I was going to say .worldcrew forever. It's, you know, songaday.world, finny.world. Yeah. It's a good TLD. Yeah, yeah. And we actually worked with a company to make our own front marketplace too, but it's still not same. Like, that's like a long-term goal for us too, is to like really make a very similar goal is what you said. It's like, not just see the latest songs, not just see the cheapest songs, but like, let's see a wide variety of songs that give us scope of what's available and what's in the project.
100%.
Yeah, man. So, so how many people are still on the team? Is it still this 30-person team, or did you guys pare it down? Yeah, yeah.
That would be kind of crazy. No, we've definitely pared it down. I mean, it was a funny process of finding people. Like, Ed was basically hiring people mainly off Upwork, and some of them were incredible, and most of the incredible people we still work with now, like, you know, on more direct contractual terms.
Yeah.
And some of them were really not very good at all, including we worked with like a studio, and the studio was probably the least good kind of altogether, which was really interesting. So we had to kind of build our own studio. And one of the pipeline that we built in order to do this required basically moving these assets between three different types of 3D software. And this was something that, you know, was not as an immediate out the box solution that anyone could provide. So we had to do quite a lot of work of building this sort of pipeline of moving it through to the point of being able to render and upload them. So we do have now a team of about five contractors who are proficient in Unity and Houdini and 3ds Max. Mm. And then we have the core team of myself and Ed and Jake and Dollar and Dan, who is our only full-time hire. And Dan is an amazing engineer. He was the CTO before joining us of a Solana-based NFT platform called Holoplex, which was very big in the sort of heyday of the Solana NFT bull market. And before then, he worked at Cameo with Jake, which is where Jake was the head of product.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
So we have a lot of Cameo boys on the team, which is fun. And yeah, we got a nice crew of people, and we're based all around the world. Like, you know, the Lamel, who's kind of our main modeler, who is the person who actually first worked with Ed to design the first ever Finny in 2016. He still is very, very involved. He's based in the Philippines, and he does almost all the modeling that we do now. And then, yeah, we have people as well working in Kosovo and Austria and Puerto Rico and Portland and, yeah, all over the place.
Did you guys raise any money in when things were still able to do that, or is most of the funding coming from? Yeah.
We did. Incredibly, we raised a small round, like a really quite small round, at the very very end of last year, very beginning of this year.
Yeah,
and that was kind of enabled us to hire Dan, and it's given us the runway to kind of build up the app and, you know, keep going. We obviously don't have indefinite funds, and that's something we're currently figuring out, but we do have a lot of really exciting plans. And the next thing that we're going to be releasing, which is keeps getting pushed back as these things do, but I'm hoping in the next sort of two to three weeks, is going to be a kind of, I think, a game changer in terms of the products and in terms of how people sort of engage with Phineas. It's a much more interactive and playful and social experience, allowing you to kind of do things with your Phineas and with your friends who also have Phineas. I'm going to try and stay intentionally vague about this.
Okay. Well, you've already got my interest peaked with the, because I was just thinking today that, like, what this kind of sort of subset of NFTs really needs is this kind of like something
social animal software.
Well, and even just simple game. Who tweeted this? Rizzle, our pal Rizzle tweeted this, where Rizzle said that his son had said, "Can we just get everybody's NFTs together in the metaverse and have like a big battle royale and all go kill each other?"
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
and Rizzle was like, not, yeah, right.
I was going to say, yeah, I saw a Milady first person shooter.
Also, Nifty Island. Like,
this is the kind of thing that I feel like needs to happen, right? Is like finally, not huge, big, whole metaverse experiences, but just simple, fun game things that we can do with each other on the internet. Yeah. It's as simple as that.
100%. Exactly. And this is kind of what we're trying to work towards. I mean, you asked what the big animal software eats the world vision is.
Yeah.
And I guess like the way that I try and articulate it these days is a couple of things, but really it's like, okay, we're interested in the ways in which like different types, particular certain types of data, and crypto is a really great example of this. Certain types of data sort of are inherently social. Like they organically give rise to, you know, social networks of their own kind. And crypto is like it's all based on social media. It's all on Twitter. It's all on Discord. Tokens are these sort of coordinating incentives for groups of people to get together and do things. The whole thing is a deeply, deeply social technology, right? It's highly emotional because of the speculative nature of it. So the stakes feel high if you're in it together with your friends, but it's also kind of PvP, and you're kind of dumping on your friends at the same time as being in it with them. Mm-hmm. So there's kind of all of this stuff going on, right? And what we're trying to figure out, or what we're trying to build, is like, okay, how can characters like Phineas, like character IP avatars, basically add another dimension to these kinds of social worlds that already exist around certain types of data? And how can they do that both as a form of self-expression and sort of a way of a new kind of way of interacting with that data, but also how can they potentially create another layer of narrative and fantasy that can kind of live around and cloak those worlds as well in its own unique way? And so, you know, the Phineyverse is the example of the latter. Everybody with a Finny participates in the same fantasy world of lore and of characters, and there are main characters, and all of this is just beginning to be expressed. And Ed especially has lots of ideas here. But all of that is built on top of very real data, very real information that has a very real sort of purpose and point in people's lives. And yeah, it's already kind of highly social. So we are trying to basically figure out at the moment how to turn the quote-unquote game of crypto itself into something that can be played out by and with Finnies.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that feels... yeah, the grounding of it, the grounding of it in this kind of like in this real world stuff is so important. Like almost like the lore rather than being something that's just like off the dome is rooted in facts, is rooted in data, which is super interesting.
Super. I mean, I think, you know, Ed and I are both really interested in things that blur the boundaries between real and fiction, you know, reality mm-hmm. and fiction or reality mm-hmm. and fantasy. And Ed's been playing a shit ton of Pokemon Go recently.
Ooh,
which
yeah.
is
yeah, yeah.
just so I've interesting in the way
I've been there.
Yeah, the way that they you have to like take, you know, your steps impact whether your eggs hatch.
Yep.
But then, you know,
yep.
you're battling and, you know, it's all happening in this oh. kind of like pokey world, but it's embedded oh. in the real world. It's just kind of it's genius, obviously, and, you know, highly successful as a result. But I think this is the kind of gray space that, and the gray area and the very, very fertile space that we're interested in kind of building within is, you know, turning, how can you kind of create some kind of narrative world around the real world that is neither one nor the other exactly.
And crypto is such an obvious place to start, not only because there's people here willing to play along, but also because, like you said, like it is already this game and you can just sort of put this frame around it and yeah, and a lot of the legwork is there. It's happening.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, it's already role play, you know, it's already, right. everybody's got their alts and, you know, everybody's performing characters and yeah, it just feels like a really, you know, but it's interesting. It's actually can be difficult to fit all of that into, because one of the beauties of the crypto game is that it is very much a, for want of a better word, decentralized social game in that everybody can fashion their own aesthetic and their own way of being and their own character yeah. to play. And you yeah. can't just kind of port that into a carefully choreographed and carefully scripted kind of universe with a unified aesthetic. That's kind of not the point. Crypto is more mm-hmm. punk than that. It's more like mm-hmm. ad hoc than that. But I think that you can capture a bit of it. But I think crypto yeah. is also not for us the end game. It's just a really interesting
yes.
place, sort of seed and place to start thinking and a place to prove out the concept. And
yes.
I mean, very much, I think for all of us, like we're not trying to be an NFT project capital P, I suppose, you know, in the same way that Doodles or D-Gods or Azuki or whatever, mm-hmm. they're trying to build this kind of IP universe around their characters. We are trying to build a kind of social sort of software platform that lives beneath or on top of, however you want to see it, RIP, but that is extensible and kind of, you know, transferable to other parts of life and to other audiences who aren't necessarily obsessed with trading and coins and finance.
In my head, I'm seeing it as literally like a frame, like you put the Finny frame up to the world and you can see that, you know, you look through that frame.
Yeah.
And you see the Finnies, you see the Finny, like Matt was saying, almost like you put a frame up and suddenly you see the Finnies there doing what they're already doing. They exist. They're always there doing their little things and you can see them when you put that frame up.
Exactly. It's like it's the looking glass, you know?
Right. Well, that makes me even more bullish than I already was. It's like, it's very exciting. To switch modes here, I want to talk about JPG, another yeah. amazing project that unfortunately we just heard has gone on hiatus or shut down or did run out of funds.
Gone on hiatus.
Yeah.
So I want to caveat anything I say by saying I'm going to tread carefully here as a original co-founder, but one who was always part-time and who hasn't been involved even part-time now for close to a year. But I am very close with the team still. And obviously following closely what's been going on and chatting to them about it. But yeah, it's gone on hiatus. The product itself, as in the website and the exhibitions tooling and the kind of decentralized list making or TCR mechanics that they had built are now viewable. They're kind of read-only, basically. And the brand and the community is going strong and will continue to go. And I think the idea is that, unfortunately, they've had to scale down, but they want to continue. I think there are very few brands that kind of represent a really pure and thoughtful and
absolutely,
you know, engagement with kind of art and culture in the NFT space. And they want to keep that flame alive. And they want to try and find maybe a more sustainable way to keep it going. And what they were building, they couldn't figure out how to make that work in this current environment, like so many people.
Can you talk a little bit though about a year ago or whatever, when you were working on like starting it up? Like, you know, I know, you know, as MP and you and Trent, like, can you talk a little bit about like where you guys were and what you were thinking about and TCRs and all of that stuff? Like,
Yeah, of course. So yeah, I met Trent pretty early on in my NFT journey through a mutual friend of ours, and he was super sweet. He'd been involved in YAM back in DeFi summer, and then he'd taken some time out and started to get really into NFTs. I just got into NFTs with my kind of art background, and I was looking for sort of art-focused projects to be involved in. And he just hit me up and was like, yo, let's you want to do a Zoom like in 10 minutes? And I was like, sure. I got on the Zoom and he started telling me about this idea that he had for a kind of like an NFT curation protocol. That was the original idea.
Yeah.
And we were like, that sounds cool, but what does that mean? What is a curation protocol? And I had some ideas about the observations I'd had of the NFT market and the way that curation as a concept was being thrown around by people at that time. This is early 2021. And the importance of creating or there being vehicles or entities that produced long-term cultural value that could underpin and sustain the financial value that's also been generated out of this space. And nothing like this really existed. So we, together with Maria Paola, who's wonderful and been in the scene for ages and has been written tons about NFTs and art and blockchain going back years now, basically set about creating this NFT exhibition tooling, where I think it was one of the first platforms where people could create curated selections of NFTs that they didn't necessarily own. And they could contextualize those NFTs, they could write captions, they could write an essay to accompany them. We, you know, built in more customizability in terms of layouts and stuff like that. So it was kind of like writing a blog post come sort of Pinterest board or something like that, where you could really just show your taste and show your interests in what was happening in NFTs at that time. It was very little kind of financial, very few of my financial mechanics behind this. There was for a long time not really much of a kind of marketplace there. It was meant to be more of a social tool like that. And the concept, I suppose, was the more people we can onboard into this platform, the more we can generate a really interesting sort of social graph and interest graph of
who likes of people who care about this stuff. Yeah, right.
Exactly. People who care about this stuff and what are they posting and what are they curating and how do, you know, what does that kind of chart begin to look like? What map do we kind of gain of the NFT landscape through this activity and the relationships that emerge from this? Then, but all the while, we were really interested, as Jonathan, I know you are as well, in this concept of TCRs and curation markets that had been around in crypto since sort of 2017 and 2018, Simon de la Riviere and so on. And we were reading that literature and we were thinking, okay, how can we try to integrate this as well? And what we ended up, and you know, that was quite different to the curation tooling that we built. But what that ended up looking like was developing an extremely lightweight notion of a TCR, which was called Canons, which was more like a sort of Wikipedia for NFTs.
Rather
than people individually curating exhibitions of the NFTs that they liked, there were these global lists of, let's say, on-chain NFTs or dynamic NFTs or Creative Commons licensed NFTs. And anybody who had the JPEG Canonicon, which was a soulbound JPEG token, could basically submit and vote on submissions for these lists. And this was a way of crowdsourcing a database, basically, of all of the on-chain NFTs in the space, or all of the ones mm-hmm. that, you know, were considered by the community properly on-chain, from a small but passionate group of users who really knew their shit. And there was also a fairly simple reputation system built into this, whereby right. the more that you voted and the more that you proposed and your proposals were accepted and so on, the more weight your vote right. and carried in this process. So that was the idea, and that was what JPEG was focusing on really for the last 12 to 18 months.
Which looked to me like super successful. From the outside, it was...
Yeah. Like usage and
people were doing it. I got DMs from people being like, can you please vote for so-and-so to be in the on-chain and over here. And I'm like, so it's, and that's always the problem with TCRs is getting people to do it, getting people to participate. It's that's always a challenge, but people were passionate about this stuff. And Yeah, man, I really enjoyed the Canon's discourse.
Mm-hmm. I really liked Canonicons as well, mm-hmm. and that sort of dynamic
yes.
reputation,
yes, like
in
too,
universe
yeah.
reputation NFT. I think that's a pattern that'll stand the test of time.
Agreed. I think it is a really interesting pattern, and also the Canonicons were fun because you could they were customizable. So the more that you voted, the more that you could customize your Canonicon NFT and, mm-hmm. it became kind of personalized. Obviously, the participation and that kind of stuff is always small, but you're right. It was, I have to say, internally, before they launched this Canon's thing, I was always probably the biggest skeptic. I thought, this sounds great. I love this idea of a kind of public goods library of, crowdsourced NFT resources, but who's going to do this? Everybody in NFT is just everybody's motivated by what's going to make their money and moving on to the next thing and whatever. But it's true. There are a small group of people who are actually really passionate and will go out of their way to contribute to these kinds of things and to have these discussions. And I remember after the first Canon was put up and, whatever, going into the JPEG Discord and going into the dedicated channel for this and seeing all of these people having these incredible debates, sending essays back and forth to one another about, what qualified as this or that, and was this correct? And I thought it was really beautiful. And I think the whole JPEG team was rightly really proud of that. I mean, the problem is, as a venture-backed company, how do you make that, do you make that make money? How do you make that into a venture-scale business? I really don't know the answer to that or if that's possible. But I hope that if not JPEG, and maybe JPEG will in the future, once we're through these tough times, if not JPEG, then somebody else will kind of pick back up on this and try and develop these kinds of resources.
I want to close actually, because I feel like you'll have something to say about this. And I know Matt and I probably do too, but this tweet from Maria Paula this morning, actually, and this when you say a very small subset, it's it really feels like the people who actually really care about the stuff that we care about, I think is quite small. And Maria says in this tweet, she says, been here since 2017 and the space, if this could say, the space still feels like a very stupid Ouroboros. Never learning, always extracting, celebrating the wrong actors, don't know how to fix this. The goals and technology are meaningful and necessary, but the hype and grifters' problems won't let us grow. Just feel like that's I don't know, put that sign up and just leave it there for everybody to see constantly.
Yeah.
Because that's really what it feels like. And I don't know. What do you can we, this is kind of a dumb question, but it's can we? Can we get past that? Is it even possible?
I mean, I'm really interested to know your guys' opinions. You guys have been around for considerably longer than I have in this world. Yeah. But I think, yeah, I like to think that we can. I don't know. I'm also like a massive skeptic and can be very cynical, but I do think there's something beautiful happening in these small, in these small quiet corners of the space of people who are building amazing things and are really knowledgeable and have great intentions. I think that can crypto overcome its like reputation problem, which is largely these days like not helped by the chronic veneration of like scam artists and stuff like that. Like, I don't know. To some extent, this is not just something that we see in crypto, right? That's something that we're seeing a lot in global politics.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't know about that, but I think that
we got to try, right? We got to keep trying.
And I think that people need, I really hope that we're at a point now where the infrastructure is, yes, okay, the UX for new people coming into crypto is still awful. That is true. There are still so many people who are world experts in this technology who go out of their way not to use it because it's such a pain in certain ways. But that being said, I do hope that we have enough of the rails now and increasingly with L2s as well, that people can begin to really, that there will be a flourishing of like consumer crypto apps of people trying to figure out really fun things that people can do on chain without having to think too much about them being on chain, but maybe making use of the unique affordances of the tech. And I think Steelcam, for example,
I was just thinking of Steelcam,
a really interesting example of maybe not a perfect implementation, sure, but like a really interesting demo.
A flash of what could be possible. Yeah.
Of what could be possible. And I think, you know, I'd love to see cool things. I know, well, yeah, there's, and I have hope, but just based on some conversations I've had with recently and some initiatives I've seen set up recently that this will happen. But we do also need people with money to come and to fund these kinds of things. And for as long as VCs are only interested in funding projects that are going to, you know, launch tokens that they can dump in immediately after they're vested or whatever, like we're not going to get that far. So I think, you know, there's a lot of different actors that need to kind of be doing their part in order for this to happen. But I try to be optimistic.
Yeah.
Yeah, agreed. Optimism. Yeah.
Are there, to close out, are there any other, Steelcam is definitely one. Are there any other crypto or NFT projects that you've seen recently that have left you feeling wowed that you can think of?
I think I really like what, I mean, I'm friends with the team, but I'm really like what Party DAO have been building, first with Party Bid, but some of the stuff that they've been building and I think they're going to bring to market pretty soon is really cool. And I think, you know, maybe their philosophy as builders and engineers is more puritanical than mine in terms of being very, very on-chain minded. But I do think that they are trying to build basically infrastructure for people to do cool things together on chain. And I think that that's really cool. And I hope that that actually might unlock and again, be one of these kinds of sets of rails that other people can build on top of. So yeah, I really like what they're doing. I'm sure there are other great examples, but they're just not springing to mind now. But they're
hard to be put on the spot. Yeah.
But there are, there are disappointingly few. I even like, and this is perhaps controversial, and I don't know if it makes sense as a business model or whatever, but I even have respect for what like Pudgy Penguins are doing. Do you know what I mean? At least they're like shipping
trying.
Something.
They're trying.
At
something.
Least they're trying. At least they're trying to do something, and it's not just like building constant vaporware. And like, I don't think, yeah. I don't know. I'm not their biggest fan, but I want to give them credit for being one of the few kind of NFT projects that I feel are actually trying to deliver something that's realistic, but also kind of fun and whatever.
Yeah. I don't see myself buying one of the physical ones, but it's like you said, like it is actually like a very interesting development, you know? Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you guys ever talked about physical finis?
We have. We have. And we have a lot of ideas in that in that way. And I think figurines and toys are one thing. Ed's background as an artist is very well suited to that. He used to be a studio assistant to Anish Kapoor, among others. And so he's very good with his hands and he's very good at making things. And I think if we were to do physicals, we might think about not doing stuffed toys, but doing something a little bit more high-end and a little bit more finished. But we also, in fact, we have done that. Like there is a Finney sculpture in production for a client right now in the space. But also in the distance, if all goes well and we're able to kind of make this into a sustainable business, like I'm extremely excited about the prospect of Finney hardware of one kind or another. We spoke about Apple Watches at the beginning, but
Tamagotchi.
You know, imagine Finneys you could wear around your neck or something. I don't know, that were connected to your phone.
Yeah.
It would be cool.
Dedicated hardware is just such a cool aesthetic. And obviously you get into like IRL connectivity, touching the two Finney things together and
exactly
having them do things. It's just such a delightful possibility.
So delightful. I agree.
Detect my mood, like a Finney mood ring, like detect my
Finney
heart rate.
Exactly.
Like my heart rate.
Exactly.
That's awesome. Can I put my Apple Watch Finney on all of my health stats
and
have it yell at me when I need to stand up instead of the fucking rings?
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Well, possibly soon. That's certainly something that we're that we're thinking about.
Wow. Well, I'm looking forward to Animal Hardware as the next, you know.
So am I.
Animal wetware.
Animal wetware.
That's all. You're all over the animal wetware. Yeah.
Yeah. Biosmart contract engineering. Yeah, exactly. Let's go.
Wow. Sam, this has been a delight. We're so excited for everything that's coming in Finney World. Thanks for joining us. This was great.
Thank you so much. It's been really great to chat with you both. I'm really happy to be on. I've listened to many Digitally Rare episodes going back from, you know, my very beginning of my time in the space. So it's an honor to be invited on as a guest.
Amazing. All right. Thanks. Bye, guys.
All right. Bye-bye.
Oh, yeah. You got to get nifty. It's time to get nifty in here. Everybody get nifty.